from KQED.
You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. News that California's first dog, a Welsh corgi named Sutter, is terminally ill has touched those who've ever bonded with a pet. Sutter has often accompanied the governor on walks around the Capitol. He's been credited with softening Governor Brown's image and even has a Twitter following numbering 10,000. Now Brown and his wife Anne are confronting an agonizing decision all too familiar to pet owners, whether to continue treatment or end his life. In this hour, Forum, we take your questions or advice about when to say goodbye and how to deal with the aftermath of the loss of a pet. And this is a half-hour segment, so the time to call is now. Let me give you the number, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. We're joined by Dr. Cheryl Ramos. She is emergency and critical care veterinarian for 15 years. She's currently the owner of Pets Eternal Rest, which focuses on euthanasia for pets. So if you have questions or comments, besides calling, you can also email them to forum@kqed.org, post them on Facebook, Twitter, on our website, kqed.org/forum. Welcome to the program, Dr. Cheryl Ramos.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. One of the things I was wondering was how you approach a pet owner facing this decision, because that's usually when they come to you, right?
Correct. It's a balance. It's a balance between the medical care and the emotional aspects of the entire family. Sometimes it is clear to a family that it's time for their pet, but not all family members are in agreement. So there's a lot of different challenges. And other times, families are just trying to sort out, is it time? Are we ready? A lot of different questions, a lot of different layers.
Right. It's so hard to know if it's something that is truly terminal or if it's something controllable, right? I've had friends who've had pets who seemed like they were on death's door, but then it was an issue of something that they were eating for a period of time that needed to be removed from their diet, and suddenly they're okay. So you go through all these questions about whether or not it's really, time.
That's a really good point. For example, there is a condition that older dogs can get. It's like vertigo in people, and it happens acutely. And a lot of people think, oh, my dog's had a stroke. It's time. So it is important, at minimum, to connect with your local veterinarian for at least an exam. History is extremely helpful. Sometimes just from a history, we can determine whether it's more of a chronic issue or if it's more acute. For example, losing weight over a period of time, that would tend to indicate a chronic issue. But you're correct. Sometimes things look very bad and can actually be a resolvable condition. So getting a medical attention for at least an exam and a history is a good start.
And we often hear that it's important to put the animal's needs first, right? Setting aside your desires to keep the animal alive and with you. Is that a common thing that you find people struggling with as well?
That is a huge struggle. Everybody interprets that differently as well. We have people on different ends of the continuum, meaning some people feel they want their animal to have more of a natural passing and death. And others have expressed, with a previous family member animal, we put them through a lot of medical treatments. They were miserable through that. And we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to give them dignity and intervene before they get to that point. And then you have everybody in between.
What if someone chooses euthanasia? What is the process?
So basically, the process, euthanasia is humane passing or humane death. And every veterinarian can approach that a little differently, although there are legal issues and legal ways to humanely euthanize an animal. One approach that I feel is very helpful for the family and the animal is to first get them very comfortable.
Do you go to their home or do you have them bring the animal to a clinic?
Right. So for my practice, I have both. I have, for most part, I go to families' homes. You know, that's where the animal's more comfortable. They don't have to, for cats, don't have to get in carrier. For big dogs, you know, they don't have to get lugged into the car. And they're comfortable in their home. There are families that are, you know, for example, a single person that they just feel those memories would be too much for them in the home. So I do have, I call it my center. It's designed like a home so they can come there. So that's one of the first decisions, is where people would like to be. But in my experience over the years, getting the animal comfortable in a sleepy, comfortable state first.
Do you give them medication?
Give them medication, pain relievers, sedatives. And, you know, it's very, generally very comforting to the family because they'll see them for first time in a long time, comfortable. Some of them are snoring, and families will even comment, wow, I haven't seen them this comfortable in a long time. And then that's reassurance they're doing the right thing. But yes, that's just the first phase.
And then after that, just very briefly, then you, after a time, do you give the family time to sort of say goodbye?
Absolutely. I place an IV catheter, and then they can have time to visit, be with them privately, and then when they're ready to proceed, we administer the euthanasia, which is rapid acting.
Well, I invited our callers to call in with any questions they might have for you, and let's start with James in Scott Valley. Hi, James.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. It's a kind of long story, but I'm going to try and keep it short. My wife was living in L.A., and she had a rescue dog, a pit bull, that was living on the streets for some time. In order for me to be able to date my wife, I had to become friends with the dog. First time I met the dog, she went from a cowering position to rearing up on her back legs and tackling me with her front legs, and she chose me. The dog picked and chose who she liked, so from that moment forward, it became my dog. About 8 months later, my son was born, and we had to make the choice. It took us about 3 months to decide, but we had to make the choice because the dog was on in years, about 10 years old, and she was an alpha female. So she'd always try and show dominance over my, you know, then toddler son. So unfortunately, because of the breed of what she, the breed of dog she was, I couldn't give her away. So I had to put her down, and it was a very unfair and very sad moment in my life. But it's been 8 years since that happened, and I miss the dog to this day. So
what an agonizing decision, James.
It was, because that dog, like I said, it chose me over my wife, and my wife rescued her. And that dog was my companion for a good year. And she and I were thick as thieves. And then I couldn't give her away because I couldn't take the chance because of who she was and the breed that she was. So I had to put her down. And, I mean, just talking about it now, it still makes me sad. So
yeah.
I think... I'm looking to get another one when my wife and I decide to get some dogs, and I'm going to rename that dog the same name as the other dog, which is Lola.
Well, James, thanks for sharing. Another listener writes, I recently said goodbye to my 11-year-old bulldog. Hardest thing I've ever had to do. And another listener writes, it helps to know I did everything possible for my friend while he was living, and I helped make the passing as gentle and painless as humanly possible. We go now to Robert in Vallejo. Hi, Robert.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
I just had a quick question on, the rising cost of pet care that's going on, as long as, what's your opinion on people spending astronomical amounts to take care of animals, maybe, you know, making them suffer through years for their own personal reasons, because they can't let go of the animal, versus how much money that costs, and then also tie that into how many animals are homeless, how many animals are in the system and at shelters, and maybe reinvesting some of that money there. I feel like people spend astronomical amounts to save dogs and their cats for, you know, what would be a very short amount of time when you have a huge population of animals that are in the system. Say, you know, you can donate a fraction of that cost to make the lives of dozens of animals better. Thank you.
Robert, thanks. Yeah, he brings up a lot of points, but also I think one that people wrestle with in terms of how to weigh the financial part of it, right? You know, when to draw the line and say financially this is too much, or a better use of my resources might be elsewhere.
Right. There's a lot of factors to look at. For some families, their dog or cat is their child, and they feel that they need to do everything humanly possible and exhaust even, you know, their finances to give their child a chance. And if they don't do so, they've let them down. On the other hand, as you mentioned, there's a lot of animals out there that those finances could go to provide general health care. And so it is a balance. Everybody has very different beliefs. And some people, even though they've done everything they possibly can do, still feel they haven't done enough. So again, in my experience, it's just a very personal decision. And generally, people are going to feel the way they feel and do as they feel they need to do.
Well, let's go to Ginny in San Jose. Hi, Ginny.
Hello there. Thank you for this. This is a very heartfelt discussion, and I'm going to go deep into what Robert had just mentioned, and I'm calling to share on the level of those who are dealing with cancer in their pets that we were taking our beloved lab back and forth to the vet to ease his pain. And in one trip, we looked at each other and said, what are we doing? Is this for us or is it for the dog? Because my mother had recently passed of cancer, and she was able to tell us she was done. And we just said, look, if Jake had the opportunity to say, let me go. So we did euthanize him that night, and it was, of course, it's coming back, very painful.
Mm-hmm.
But several neighbors afterward who had been through years of chemo, amputations, yada, 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 that we so wish we had had that, we'd taken that route. And I know it's not for everyone, but it was really, really helpful for us, so I just wanted to share it.
Ginny, thank you for sharing it. And we can also hear the pain in Ginny's voice. We heard it also from our earlier callers. Why do people report that the grieving process for the loss of a pet is as or even more intense than the loss of a relative? What is it about that connection with animals?
Yes, and I've had many people express that their grief was much deeper for their animal than a relative. I've thought about this a lot, and I think a big part of it is they love us for who we are. You know, they don't judge us. You know, we come home grumpy, in a bad mood. They're there right by our side. They never leave us. They're always there, no matter what's going on in our life, how we look, what we're doing. They love us. And I think that is a huge, huge part.
Christine writes, I have three times made the difficult choice to help pets in passing. I saw pain and confusion with treatments and medications they didn't want. I realized that just because I could push through treatment, it wasn't an emotionally safe decision. It matters a great deal to be able to make the right choice at the right time, different for all of us, but real. Let's go to Julian in San Jose. Hi, Julian.
Hi, thank you for taking my call and for such a great program. I had a quick question about euthanasia, specifically, a lot of the people I know, it seems like they're either pushed or they have to make the choice to euthanize pretty much right after they take their pet into the vet when the pet is showing signs of sickness. And I'm wondering, is there a particular reason for that? Are we not aware of signs that might allow us to take animals in earlier and maybe get them better treatment before it becomes fatal? Or if that's just an unavoidable problem.
Mm, Julian, thanks.
That's a really good point. When I used to practice emergency and critical care, I think just from our training in veterinary school and medicine that, you know, veterinarians, our job is to treat and fix. And we're fixated on that. We're not used to, you know, the hospice aspect of animals. We're used to it in people, but not in animals. And I can think from personal experience where, you know, I suspect a terminal illness in an animal, the animal's on a decline. And internally, as a veterinarian, we want to help. And now we can't. we've exhausted, medical treatments. The animal's uncomfortable. This is only going to get worse. So it's time to euthanize. Where we didn't stop, take a breath, and, discuss with the family that we're at this juncture, Do you feel like you'd like to go home and spend some time, be in your home, and talk about your options for euthanasia? Do you want to be at home? We kind of missed that chapter. And I believe now, especially with, veterinarians providing euthanasia at home, now have an opportunity to open this chapter and start it. But that's a very good question.
And maybe help to avoid what is commonly reported after a decision to euthanize if it hasn't gone through the real timing process that you're talking about, like bitterness or guilt or second-guessing your decision constantly. For folks who are going the route of wanting to choose a natural death, what should they be considering?
Yes, natural deaths... they can be extremely unpredictable. I think the important thing, at least, me as a animal lover and a pet owner myself, is their comfort. I mean, animals can, for days be recumbent, meaning, not moving much. But if they appear comfortable, hopefully they are comfortable. Other animals really struggle. There are certain medical conditions, respiratory, difficulty breathing can be extremely uncomfortable. And most people will recognize that, my animal's really in distress. So I have worked with some families who really had wanted a natural passing, but when it was getting close to the end, they did see signs of discomfort, and then they felt it was important to intervene.
I know it's hard, but is there any specific signs that people can look for?
I think breathing would be one. Animals, too, when they're getting close to near death, they can get these glazed looks. At that point, they're already in the process of passing. So it is difficult to pinpoint exactly. I do think they give us an expression. A lot of people will use, the term, and I've used it too. They give you that look, like, help me. And they have that expression. And I think that's really important to try to recognize. And I think if you sit with your animal and try not to think too much, but feel, I think you will pick up on that.
Sagan in Santa Rosa. Hi, Sagan. Am I saying your name right?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you.
I've been listening to your program, and it touches me very, very deeply. I've had dogs all my life, and I'm struggling right now with my German Shepherd because he's a little bit older, but he's going into hip dysplasia. He's having trouble walking. And my main advice that I got from a dear friend a while ago that I kind of lived by and passed by to everyone that I know is that if the dog has more bad days than good days over a period of time, they're getting sick and everything, then it's the best choice to kind of ease them into a peaceful state.
Sagan, that's good advice, and I know it's difficult, but I am just wondering what you do to say goodbye to your dogs. Do you have a ritual or process?
I've gone through it before, once at the vet and once at home, and I think that you said this before, but making them comfortable, being around them, you are their number one. We have our moms and our dads and our brothers and friends and family, but they only have you. So to make sure that you're there to ease them through the process, it's hard, for people. It's hard for families to go through that. But if you can give them those last final moments of peace, just hold them, give them some, something that makes them comfortable, some peanut butter. My dogs like peanut butter. and just be there for them, And what really works for me, too, is praying and knowing that I gave him the time, if he was going to come back and everything. I gave him a chance. And like you said just recently, that they'll give you a look, like, Mom, it's time for me to go.
Well, Sagan, thanks for sharing.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Nadine writes, During the last 2 days of my dog's life, she did not want to be in the house. She felt more calm in the car, so I drove her to the vet's, and the vet came into the car and put her down there. Gerald writes, "We kept on hearing that the cat had a decent chance of a few more years of enjoying life, so we kept trying. We gave up when she threw a fit and seemed in obvious pain. Delaying was the single worst thing I've done." Ronald asks, "I feel it was important for the other animals in the home to witness their cohort's passing. I wonder what the doctor thinks about this."
Yes, I strongly feel it's important at minimum for the other animals to have an opportunity to view them at minimum when they've passed. I've had many, many people report when they've had their dog euthanized at the vet's office and then they come home without their dog. The other dogs search, and I've had people tell me they've searched for sometimes weeks, where when they've had the euthanasia at home and the other dogs were able to view them, then they didn't search. I've witnessed watching animals, they get it. They will go, some of them will keep a distance, some will go right up to them. I had a little kitty curl up on a dog once, but I think it's extremely important to give them an opportunity to view them. I don't necessarily think they have to be right there. I think the family dynamics will dictate what's right for that family. Some animals go off in the other room. Others sit right by them or by the family.
We're taking your questions and stories about confronting the agonizing decision of whether to continue treatment or end a pet's life and how to deal with the loss afterward. How do you know when it's time to adopt a new pet?
Yes.
After the loss of one, yeah.
Everybody's very different. I've had a few people express that actually the next day, you know, they went out and, you know, I remember one woman expressed how she felt guilty. And I said, don't. I think it's a tribute to your dog because he gave you so much love. You gave him so much love. And you get to do it again. And I, for me personally, and when I got a new dog, it reminded me that they're all special. You don't replace them. You just grow new bonds. And other people take years. I do believe they find you. Most people will have told me that as well. I wasn't looking, but they found me. So I do think, you know, organically it happens when the time's right.
Dr. Cheryl Ramos is an emergency and critical care veterinarian. She's currently the owner of Pets Eternal Rest, which focuses on euthanasia for pets. Roberta in Oakland. Hi, Roberta.
Hi. Oh, excuse me. Hello. I'm listening. I'm going to try and tell this story without crying. So our dog was a beautiful lab Rottweiler mix, and he was 10, and he was getting older. And he collapsed one day, and three of us had to carry him into the car and got him to emergency, where they told us he had hemangiosarcoma. And his gums were gray, and we'd never heard about that. It's a breed-specific cancer. I mean, it affects certain breeds more than others. And they saved his life by tapping the sac around his heart. I'm sure you know this procedure. And because the blood was collecting and compressing his heart. So they got him breathing again. I got him to UC Davis, where they told me, where I spent all day getting x-rays, ultrasounds, everything. Now, we don't have children, and so keep that in mind. They're our kids. I don't think I can love a child any more than I love my pets. Mm. Anyway, they told us that, you know, I talked to the cardiologist, and then they told us that the tumor was on the one spot on his aorta they could operate. And so I talked to my husband, and I said, there's no way we're not doing this. And so they did the surgery, and I understand that all the medical students were hanging from the rafters to watch this because they didn't get a chance to watch the surgery very often because people opt not to do it. But I just truly, I may have been crazy, but I truly, truly believe that if I did everything right, we were going to make history. Because they told me they don't have a whole lot of history about dogs living alone. I mean, they gave me all the facts, and I truly, maybe I was nuts. Anyway, we did it.
Yeah.
And he lived 6 months, and I gave him acupuncture. I gave him, I mean, I stayed by that dog's side. I cooked for him. I mean, he was on ground turkey and quinoa and kale.
And Roberta, do you feel like it was worth it ultimately?
My husband and I have talked. We spent a lot of money. We went into retirement.
Yeah.
And it's not for everybody, but I really think that dog had an amazing 6 months.
Roberta,
he was a happy guy until they told me the tumors were back. And he went south so fast, like 2 days after I went for chemo. And then they said, they're back. And I was begging him to go. And I spent the whole day on the floor with him waiting for the vet to come to the house. And I've done this 5 times. I mean,
and that's how you said goodbye to him, by his side.
Goodbye, and our friends were with us. I mean, we were around him all day. I had people coming by all day saying goodbye to Sam.
Well, Roberta, thank you so much for sharing your story. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
John in Los Altos. Hi, John.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I love the program, and I certainly can appreciate the deep love that people feel for their dogs and cats. I'm just wondering, actually, about how they reconcile that with regularly eating bacon and steak and killing millions of – it would kill 800 million cows and pigs every year in the U.S. and 9 billion chickens. And they feel love for their offspring. They develop attachment to humans and so on. So how can we balance those two, you know, spending a lot of money and deeply loving cats and dogs, which is totally understandable?
Yeah.
And yet regularly eating many other animals.
Well, John, it's a thought-provoking question, and I'll let it stand. We'll leave it there and let our listeners think about that as we contemplate how attached we do get to our animals. Heather writes, we hired a hospice vet when our beloved kitty was passing away. It was a bit expensive, but it was worth every penny. The vet spent a lot of time with us and got us prepared and well-armed for everything that might happen. She left us medication for pain management and checked in frequently. When we did decide to euthanize our kitty, it was done at home, taking our time and with a lot of love. Sandy writes, I've had to put down 2 cats and 2 pet rats in my adult life. I have all of their ashes with me, and I have it written in my will that when I die, I will have my ashes combined with my pets and plant a tree. And Mags writes, please mention a local shelter that will help you euthanize compassionately. Do you have a recommendation, Dr. Cheryl Ramos?
I know the shelters do euthanize and can do it at a low cost. From my experience with families that have done that, they don't allow the family to be present. So I don't have any more information on that regarding specific shelters. I apologize.
Well, Cheryl Ramos, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I think this was a topic that folks really wanted to weigh in on today.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks to our listeners for sharing their story. Cheryl Ramos with Pets Eternal Rest. Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Judy Campbell, and Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online help from Amanda Font. Our interns are Maxine Schofer-Wolf and Brandon Yu. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll, and Joanne Wallace is our executive producer. I'm Mina Kim. Have a great weekend, and go hug that 2-legged or 4-legged companion. This is Forum. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.